Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates, plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Pollock and Thurston. John Pollock from Post Wrestling. Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics. Your mega powers have come together for yet another week of news, analysis, and a checkup on the AEW media rights deal. As the graphic states, are we there yet? Are we there yet, Brandon? What line of scrimmage are we at this point?
We're at the 2-yard line. I don't know. What do you think? I've already pulled the alarm, though. You said we had to pull the alarm on Labor Day. So the alarm has been sounding now for a couple weeks.
Yes, yes. AEW's very existence up in the air, as they are. Could be within a week of hearing this announcement. We're going to get into that a little later on with Brandon Ross, returning guest from Lightshed Partners. He will be speaking with us about the latest reporting from Puck. We're going to talk a little bit about SmackDown's exit from Fox, the Sphere event that the UFC put on this past weekend in Las Vegas. But a lot to get to on this show. Saturday night's main event is coming back. We've got ratings notes. We've got plenty to talk about. But some late news that just came across our desk, Brandon, that is related to Janelle Grant, who has enlisted another PR firm. She is attached to Tag PR and will be retaining that PR firm. But in addition to that, she is also going to be involved with a group called SKDK. Are you familiar with this firm? Had you ever heard of this before?
No, that sounds like a programming acronym, but I'm sure it stands for something else in either case.
Well, the press release that came out, Janelle Grant, former WWE employee and sexual assault survivor, brings on PR firm SKDK ahead of Vince McMahon Netflix docuseries premiere. Attorneys for Janelle Grant, the former WWE employee and sexual assault survivor who has filed a lawsuit against former CEO Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and the WWE organization, has retained the services of SKDK's Kendra Barkoff Lammy ahead of the September 25th premiere of Netflix's Mr. McMahon docuseries. Barkoff Lammy and SKDK have previously represented the survivors of Harvey Weinstein, Marilyn Manson, Jeffrey Epstein, and more. They also supported the former employees of the Washington Commanders in their lawsuit against then-owner Dan Snyder, which led to the sale of the team. Grant continues to retain the services of the agency group, and they included a statement here with one here from Ann Callis, who stated that SKDK has a proven track record of uplifting survivors of sexual violence and human trafficking. We look forward to our partnership in seeking justice on behalf of our client, Janelle Grant.
Yes. I guess maybe they're anticipating a favorable view of Vince in this documentary. I don't know. Obviously, we know that Janelle Grant was not interviewed for this documentary. There was some discussion between the parties about including her, but she was not included.
That's right. The series drops next week. All six episodes will be released next Wednesday. And because of this, Brandon and I are going to do a show the following day, next Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And we will be focusing on episodes 1 and 6, which we understand are going to be the ones that are most heavily weighted towards the Janelle Grant lawsuit. And, well, really, it's going to be an interesting, producing of those episodes from Netflix when we know that Vince McMahon did not participate in the series after the lawsuit had been filed. A lot of these interviews were done before the lawsuit had dropped. And it's kind of interesting, Brandon, because like the little that I have seen reaction to in that, well, so much of this was done before the lawsuit dropped. It's as though like Vince McMahon was this pristine figure before January of 2023, when in fact, like these allegations had come out. We had already gone through one resignation. It's not as though it was just before and after January 2023. Like I am hoping January 2024. Yes, I'm getting my Januarys mixed up. Yes. But it's not as though there wasn't a lot for these various interview subjects to be pressed on regarding Vince McMahon and allegations that were already out there, and enough that necessitated a first resignation in the summer of 2022.
Yeah. I mean, before that point, I guess we knew that there were 7 different allegations of sexual misconduct. 4 that included NDAs that involved Vince. We knew of the story of Rita Chatterton alleging rape by Vince McMahon in 1986. But you didn't have the story in as much detail as Janelle Grant provided in her complaint that was filed just this January. You know, I think it's kind of, you know, the difference between statistics and a powerful anecdote, a powerful story.
So we will be discussing this heavily next week. Wei Ting and I are also going to be doing some separate reviews of each episode at postwrestlingcafe.com that will be coming out beginning next Friday. We're going to do some like mini reviews of each episode. So those will be available postwrestlingcafe.com. We'll get to that next week. Let's take a look at the report that came out this past Monday from John Oren's newsletter, The Varsity, over at Puck. Zaz on the ropes. And this is, when you're bringing out the wrestling analogies for headlines, you know, it's television contract season, Brandon.
Yes. Do you think that's what it was? It wasn't just, he wouldn't have used that line if not for the Wrestling Association.
No, I think we had to have the wrestling tie-in for such. I wonder what is being held for the announcement of the deal. What wrestling maneuver will be utilized when the big announcement is made. But this comes from, John Orand, who, reports, these days, David Zaslav is putting some of that $1.5 billion that he saved on the NBA to use. First, there was the French Open deal, then the Savannah Bananas broadcast agreement, plus the CFP, Mountain West football, and Big East basketball packs. Now I'm told that Warner Brothers Discovery is close to finalizing a package to renew Shahid and Tony Khan's All Elite Wrestling. Insiders are telling me that a formal announcement could come as soon as next week, barring any last minute challenges. It looks like it will be a 4-year deal, 3 years guaranteed, plus an option, and the $170 million per year number floating around wrestling message boards is apparently in the ballpark. According to the parameters of the agreement, AEW matches will air on TNT, TBS, and True TV twice a week, further evidencing Zaz's strategy of making the latter two networks more valuable and sports-oriented in the cable bundle as the potency of TNT declines sans professional basketball rights. Goes on to state that meanwhile, this deal marks a clear success for AEW, which launched 5 years ago with a threshold WBD deal. AEW is also pitching another package primarily to broadcast channels. There's no timetable for when AEW will start to push that deal.
Yes. What are the wrestling message boards that he's referring to? What wrestling is John Oren on, like Wrestling Classics? Is he on the Wrestling Classics message board? Where's he been browsing?
I'm sure that historian Steve Yohei has been telling him about, you know, the history of media rights deals. I'm sure he's been hitting up various boards. I'm sure he's lurking on Reddit. John Orand is everywhere.
I would assume. Maybe meant Reddit. I could see that being interpreted as a message board, I suppose. Yeah,
wrestling message boards, because that's how wrestling is covered, in message board form. But yeah, there is nothing here that is set in stone. It is kind of, this is the ballpark that he's hearing of 170 million, but it does leave a lot of questions about what this deal is going to entail. Most absent from this is the pay-per-view component that I think everyone is curious to see what level of engagement Max is going to have in this forthcoming deal and what this, let's go with the range of 170 million, what all that it covers, and also this True TV component that is added to the mix.
Yeah. So this is, I know everyone has tuned in for our analysis of this, and I've prepared my definitive analysis. This is right for all people at all times on this story specifically. We don't know. What's going to happen? I don't know. Tony Khan mouthed the word Max. What other details can we scratch out of the story?
He wore a hat.
He wore a WBD hat. He wore a Max hat. That certainly leads one to believe that there's some Max content coming to Max. I don't know. BR Sports is going to launch in October. Maybe there's something there. 170 per year sounds reasonable. It sounds like a good deal. That's the kind of deal that AEW would need to be financially viable. I believe that's very believable. Does that include pay-per-view? I don't know. He doesn't mention pay-per-view, but it's John Oran reporting on media business, on sports media business, that, you know, he's not attuned to every detail that every, you know, rabid wrestling fan is, you know, combing over in these details. He might have been told that by sources, but just didn't include it and didn't find it that pertinent. What else? It's interesting to know that they're shopping another deal to broadcast, and I can see the argument there, right? They're on cable. That's great. Cable's in decline. You want to be on broadcast. Maybe there's some streaming element to this, whether it's through Max or whatever, and it would be nice to be on broadcast as well. What are the realistic options there? Fox, maybe FS1, though that's what people think. So then we're not talking about broadcast. Then we're talking about cable. Maybe ION. Maybe we should think more about ION, which does have sports like the WNBA. That's possible. CBS, I don't think so. NBC is a WWE partner. I don't think so. ABC is a UFC partner. I don't think so. So maybe Fox or ION, I guess. But who knows? There's discussion too. I think Dave Meltzer mentioned it in his report earlier today, that maybe Rampage would go away. That sounds plausible. And that would sure be a relief if they're going to add another program called Shockwave, consistent with the trademark filing that they're applying for. So yeah, $170 million is in the range of what they would need. What are they getting right now? It's always so complicated to try to explain this. In terms of annualized over the lifetime of this deal, if Collision had existed for the entire duration, then I think they're getting an average annual value of about $70, $75 million per year. This year, because it's got escalators, and this is the nature of basically all sports TV rights deals, they get a little bit better in payment every year. So I think they're getting maybe for this year of 2024, maybe around $90 million in payments related to their U.S. rights. So if you go from, say, in the final year of this deal, maybe 90 up to 170, or maybe more if there's other deals involved here, to like 200, then yeah. Other thing I think is real interesting is what John Oran reports is the duration of this deal.
That's what I want to ask you about, the term.
3 years guaranteed, a 1 year option. Their current deal. Yeah.
I was just going to say that the trend has been to lock up a lot of these rights for minimum 5 years. And in the case of
Netflix, might have WWE for 20 years.
The idea is that with these escalating costs, like, yes, you're going to pay an exorbitant fee, but then you don't have to go back to the negotiating table in another couple of years to renegotiate. And this seems to be, as you know, a shorter term than I was expecting. Like, I was looking at, you know, 5 seems to be the magic number for a lot of these deals.
If I'm WBD and AEW diehards, cover your ears. If I'm WBD, that sounds right to me. I don't want to make a long-term commitment of beyond 3 or 4 years with AEW, because I don't know, the direction of their popularity is not encouraging. Their TV value is strong, and it's probably worth the amount that they're going to renew for. But their popularity direction is concerning, and I don't know where it's going to be in 4 years from now. And then it's good to have that option year two in case it's not in a good place. Or, you know, but on the other hand, you've got the opportunity here, if you're AEW, to, you know, make them, you know, to go through this short-term deal and perform really strongly and grow your company and improve the popularity, improve your media value in all the ways that you can, and then get a renewal for even more money. But I would have concerns if I was WBD about the long-term future. Not enough to not renew, but I would have concerns about the direction of this company and its declining engagement with fans.
Would that have been as evident to you if, let's say, this was 1 year ago? Do you feel that that would have been the same sort of approach WBD takes, that this is still a startup property and that we're not putting all of our chips into long-term with AEW? Would this come across as more surprising to you if this were, say, a year ago and these are the terms we're looking at?
A year ago, they're already starting to decline, as I'm pulling up some of my year-over-year comparisons.
This is right after the Punk release 1 year ago, for context. We're just coming out of that significant event.
Right. And so Q4 2023, they're already down with AEW ratings by 10%. And I know Tony would probably say, well, that's just cord cutting. But they're starting to go down. And if we look at attendances at that time, what was that on a year-over-year basis? It was not as bad. So it's definitely a year ago. It's easier to be confident, but a year ago, you still got Punk is gone. Punk has been gone for just over a year, and that's a rightful concern. And I think, if you're asking me, I think what happened with CM Punk, which he deserves a lot of blame for, is also an indicator about problems that AEW has with talent management and leadership.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Jumping into this conversation now, someone that has been on the program in the past, you know him from Lightshed Partners, friend of the show, Brandon Ross, who is here with us to make sense of all the pro wrestling wheelings and dealings that are happening. How are you today, Brandon?
I'm good. How are you guys? Yeah, my name in here is Other Brandon for today. It's been a while. How have you guys been?
Pretty good. You've been going to the Sphere a lot.
I have. I did not go for UFC this week, though. But I have seen the musical acts there. And of course, Postcard from Earth. So,
We're definitely going to touch upon the Sphere event from this past week and a lot of reaction to the UFC's one, will it be only, event at Sphere. Mm-hmm. But piggybacking off what we were just discussing in terms of the AEW media rights deal, it looks as though they are right on the precipice of a renewal with Warner Brothers Discovery, potentially bringing in a broadcast partner in this next round of rights. How would you assess the lay of the land for AEW, especially as it relates to WBD and their strategy in the next 3 to 4 years?
Yeah, so obviously WBD is reeling a little bit from the loss of the NBA, and they needed to amalgamate a bunch of different sports rights or sports entertainment in this case in order to secure the affiliate deals that they have with all the different MVPDs. And you saw that they just completed one with Charter last week. Do I think that AEW was crucial to that agreement actually happening? No, I do not think that AEW was crucial, which leads me to my second point, which is the $170 million a year that's been bandied about seems like it's probably a little bit too high for what Zaslav is willing to pay, given the relative importance of AEW likely to his to his affiliate rights.
So you're saying that you don't believe that that number is accurate, or that they are paying it'll be too high. You think it'll come in lower?
Yeah, I would be. I mean, this is personally. I don't have any, inside baseball on this one. It doesn't seem like something that at this point, Zazz, knowing where they are with their debt load, their need to increase free cash flow, and at the exact same time, get their affiliate deals done. I don't see that he's going to be willing to pay a huge price for this particular asset, given where the viewership is at now. And also given, the point that while it's engaging, it's not actually sports. And I think the MVPD, distribution partners are looking for sports.
And I guess so if, and I agree that, you know, AEW is probably not driving very much in carriage value. So what's the value then that you're getting out of AEW if you push away carriage value is just ad revenue. And I guess some marketing, whatever you can promote while AEW is on the television.
Yeah, that's kind of my point. Now, if AEW was in a position of ascendancy where it looked like they could be a challenger to a WWE, then perhaps Zazz would be, or David Zaslav would be willing to roll the dice, but I don't necessarily, I think that price sounds a little bit high for me. And the next question is, putting that aside, are there other bidders? Because all of these licensing deals come down to what does the marketplace look like? We just went through this with WWE, right? And the market wasn't exactly what investors had hoped it was going to be at the time. They wound up with an amazing deal with Netflix that's going to secure their future for 20 years. But, the number itself wasn't what investors had hoped. And I think WWE clearly is in much more of a power position, especially under the new regime, than AEW.
Yeah, it seems like Fox calculated that they weren't making enough money off of SmackDown there. But, and by the way, there's some shady, PR graphics about their college football ratings on Friday, this past Friday. But yeah, I believe that maybe Amazon had some interest in WWE rights, but clearly it wasn't enough to run the price up much higher. And when it comes to AEW, I continue to calculate that maybe it's Amazon, maybe some interest from Fox if they want a much cheaper.
I don't know. I don't think Fox is there personally. Based on what I know about Fox, I know it was reported that there was potentially a meeting for broadcast distribution there. That's another one.
That they're shopping.
I don't know. I'd be surprised if they went in that direction.
How important do you feel that AEW is in terms of a pay-per-view play for Max? Is that where they see the true value in AEW, that it's ultimately getting these fans that are accustomed to spending $50 every other month to become Max subscribers, and that's the real benefit here of your AEW product?
Yeah, but Max doesn't have a pay-per-view offering. So are they going to do what ESPN did with ESPN Plus and add pay-per-view to it? I don't know. I think they're still trying to figure out exactly what the content mix for Max is going to be in terms of traditional OTT programming. I don't know that they're really looking to add pay-per-view at this point.
To add the functionality of like an a la carte upcharge purchase like there is on ESPN Plus for UFC, I gather that that's harder than it would sound on paper to create, and especially just for one.
Yeah, and it's also
product.
You're kind of confusing the customer a little bit, right? I think they need to first figure out if they want to charge for a sports tier on Max before they get into whether or not they're going to add pay-per-view.
There's also the balance that we have seen. You know, AEW has gone through a pretty significant downgrade in popularity, especially over this last year, when you're looking at, less important figures like live attendance, but still a very strong barometer of where the brand is. and the potential of adding hours of content. Like, we are looking at this long-term play where, you know, the whole kind of purpose of AEW was to be this strong alternative, and now it's an alternative to a product in WWE that is receiving a lot of positivity from the fan base, and AEW is becoming, you know, a product that is, you still have your solid flagship show on Wednesday, but it's spreading that audience to its other programming that over the long term, is there going to be that continued erosion with more hours?
Yeah, I think the point you're trying to make is at the time AEW was launched, WWE was in a completely different place under the Vince regime. And since Paul's taken over creative, things look a lot different. And I don't know that the need is really there as much for an alternative, or at least not enough of a need that you're going to see AEW become really ascendant.
And do you know what the latest is with the BR Sports? They were talking about putting sports onto
Bleacher
Max.
Sports, yeah.
Yeah. Is that still happening? I saw October release for that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Look, there's the BR tier was necessitated by the old NBA contract, right?
Yeah.
So once the NBA deal is up, which is right, we're a year away now, mm-hmm. and it doesn't look like Turner's going to be a part of that, unless the lawsuit goes a little bit differently than we think, they're going to have to figure out exactly what that, you know, sports tier, if any, looks like, whether everything's all sports is going to be included like it is for Peacock, or whether they're going to tier it out. But the reason, again, it was tiered out and called Bleacher Report was a byproduct of the historical NBA deal.
What is the sense you get, Brandon, just from the people you speak to about this cloud over Warner Brothers, where it just feels like this exit with the NBA is going to be this needless lawsuit? Like, what is the end game for WBD in all of this? Is it to just hopefully get some settlement and go away? Because it just feels like it's this albatross that prevents them from moving forward into the post NBA era for the company.
Yeah. Well, obviously they had some positive news in just getting that Charter deal done last week, right? So the sky isn't falling, and who knows? I think that they have an MFN with Comcast, who has a deal coming up. So it's possible if Comcast plays hardball, then, you know, the Charter deal itself would reset. But aside from that, it's just about, you know, finding the right mix of things. And I think it's kind of foolhardy to go and sue your former partner, because I don't think that sends the right message to other potential partners. And I think Zaslav's doing it because he thinks he's going to win and get however many billion dollars and be able to delever. But I mean, as we've looked at the facts at Lightshed, we don't see it as a likely outcome that WBD is going to win this case.
Yeah, so it's some case law backing it up between USA and WF of all things.
Yep. Yeah, of course. Yeah, we wrote about that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I do want to chat with you about the Sphere, but just a closing thought on Fox getting out of the WWE business and how you sort of view this 5-year experiment having weekly broadcast television for WWE and what they got out of this deal. Ultimately, they did get a renewal going to USA, but ultimately they were, for Fox, it was just too rich for their blood, even for a program that mostly won Friday nights for them.
Yeah, I think Fox is being fairly conservative, and they're looking at every piece of content they bring in and asking themselves, what are the economics for us going to be? How important is this to our affiliate deals, which for them is probably less than others because they carry a big NFL package to start with? And then how much ad revenue are we making off it? And it turned out for Fox, who really doesn't have any kind of over the top distribution strategy, it just didn't make sense anymore. Now, Netflix picked it up. Picked up global distribution, and Netflix is in a completely different position for the future than Fox is. they can actually be a kingmaker for WWE simply by putting this content on their own home screen. So I expect that to pay benefits for both Netflix and for WWE in the future in increasing WWE's popularity, which I think you're going to see come through in live events revenue, which has been pretty much rocking and rolling there, and merchandise and other line items.
I guess if you think about what you mentioned there about Netflix will put it on the home screen, I guess that's something that maybe we don't point out enough, in that it's not just that they're going to be in Netflix, which is, you know, some 60, 70 million households in the United States, and as well as the content will be in
260
Canada.
Million worldwide, yeah, right?
Globally, but that it's not just that it's going to be on the interface, you'll be able to find it, but that they'll position it, because they're paying and they're promoting it, they'll position it highly so that when you open the Netflix app, you're going to have WWE in your face.
That's right. And they tested WrestleMania in New Zealand, and yes, the results were completely off the charts. And look, one of Netflix's largest ambitions right now is to build a huge ad business. And this is content that lends itself to advertising, as we've seen historically. So for that reason, I really expect them to elevate this content on a global basis. And I think this deal, and we said it at the time, is a real win-win for WWE and Netflix.
So with so many of these rights being shored up for years to come, the UFC sort of finds themselves in this very advantageous position, as their rights will be up at the end of next year. And we can transition over to a Noche UFC from this past Saturday at Sphere, and a lot of attention, Brandon, on one Jeff Bezos in attendance at Sphere. Yeah. And you know how we can just take attendance to mean there's a bidder right there at the
table. Look, I think we played that game with Amazon during the WWE rights renewal, and that didn't work out so well for us. I'll start with that. The other thing is, vis-a-vis Bezos, I went to the premiere of Postcard from Earth, which is the original content at Sphere. And guess who was across the aisle? Jeff Bezos. Oh, so,
maybe he's just got a season's pass at Sphere for all.
I think
premieres.
Jeff Bezos can go wherever he wants, whenever he wants, and he likes technology. And the Sphere is an amazing place, as you guys have heard me say many times on the Lightshed podcast.
What was your optimism about the ability to pull off a live sporting event, having been there for it? Like, we have never seen something at this level. Very the most ambitious event I believe UFC has ever undertaken, and that includes during the pandemic. But did you see this as a achievable goal for the very high expectations that Dana White set going into this show?
Yeah, I think it was a real challenge, right? Because this building is not built for sports at all. And so they had to rig things so that it would work out for them, first of all. Second of all, if you've been in Sphere, you know that the focal point in Sphere is not the action on the stage, or in this case, the ring. So you have to completely rebuild the experience for that venue itself. And frankly, I wasn't sure if, you know, the DNA of UFC is as amazing of a promoter as Dana is not creating original content. So I was not sure what the quality of the original content was going to be in there. I think it worked out pretty well. Do I think it could have been better? Maybe. I think that it wasn't necessary to make the event around Mexican Independence Day. I think it would have had a wider point of interest if it was something else. But by all means, it seems like this was an extremely successful show. The big question in my mind is twofold. One, will this ever be done again for UFC? And two, will it be done for WWE? And if you think about what I just said, the DNA being storytelling, right? And the things that WWE does very well, I think WWE content would be even better in this building than UFC was. And obviously that's a high bar because, again, they did a great job. But I think WWE would play even better. The question is, can they charge high enough prices to offset the investment that would have to go into building content for WWE?
Right. Because as much as these companies are intertwined now, there's a very different, let's say, average ticket price between UFC and, and WWE. So they just set a gate record here. John, you know, it's $22
million. $22 million was the announced figure.
And WWE
and also a much more mature sponsorship business that UFC has that WWE has not reached at this level either.
Yeah. Like, I mean, look, they still have kind of the Endeavor machine behind them. And, you know, nobody is better at that than Ari Emanuel, right? So
the question as well is, like, of course, such a big figure was, you know, the enormous cost of putting this on. I would be curious if this was one of those, like, the canary in the coal mine of efficiencies that are found after you've staged this UFC event, that the next time around we can slash a lot. That was a lot of trial and error to figure out logistics of this whole thing.
And by the way, there was no precedent even. There were very few things that they could even draft off of. They had to figure out, you know, simple things like, what, like, how do we have, you know, the light rig?
Yeah.
Like in place.
There's only been concerts to this point.
Yeah. Only been concerts. And guess what? There were only three bands that had even been in that building, right? It was U2, it was Phish, and it was Dead & Co. And that's it. Now, did I actually see some best practices in this fight? Yeah. There were definitely, visuals that reminded me of other things I've seen in Sphere. So there was probably a little bit that they could draft off, but I mean, there's still a lot more, that is going to be done in that building that if they come back in the future, they could draft off, you know, whatever concerts and EDM artists come in addition to the experience they've already had and whatever fixed costs they needed just to get started. I'm extremely hopeful that they do it again.
Yeah. And it's hard to imagine, like, maybe it's a WrestleMania. A WrestleMania did $35 million in ticket sales on two nights this year.
That's right.
Which is a new record for
that. That's right. But what's the difference? The capacity.
Exactly,
I mean, you're talking about, in this case, it was a 15,000 person capacity. Right. And for concerts, it's generally been, what, 18,000 person capacity.
And in my mentions, for what it's worth, I already got a lot of people complaining. Whenever a W show sells out, oh my God, these ticket prices were so high. And in fact, even on this very show, we're getting, you know, comments here about how the concerns that they're going to, W is going to push away families and people with lower incomes.
No, I get that. It's interesting because I'm a Mets fan and there's been a big debate as to why the Mets, I mean, they're, you know, on the cusp potentially of a playoff spot. Every game is extremely meaningful. Yet this week, you know, half the stands were empty and the conversation on Twitter has been, it's just very, very expensive. And so that's
obviously the seats are empty. There's some supply there. It's not that demand is too high.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always about price, though. It's just on the where the supply and demand curve clears. And so that's the one risk you raise in continuously raising prices for these WWE events. But the key thing to do is just price the house accordingly. Have the seats up front be priced to the demand point at very high prices, and then have, you know, seats upstairs that everyone can afford.
Yeah. And I just think that's the natural evolution. And for UFC and WWE specifically, when it comes to especially their pay-per-view content, like, there is going to be a fan base that are only going to be consumers through their screens. Like, this is not going to be priced for just a family of four to go to a WWE or UFC pay-per-view. It is just like that. And the demand is there. I can't fault them for
absolutely not. This is the huge issue in the concert business right now, right? We saw it with Oasis in the UK a couple of weeks ago, where you had a literal 10-to-1 ratio of people who tried to get or wanted to go to the show versus the amount of seats that are there. And obviously, unfortunately, that's just going to clear at very high prices. Now, are these events anywhere near where the, you know, highest profile concerts are in overwhelming demand? No. But, you know, pricing things correctly is still a big lever for WWE and probably UFC in terms of balancing the highest potential gate with the over keeping fans really engaged and feeling like they could be a part of the product.
How key was Riyadh season to the economics of this show on Saturday?
I think that was very key. What was that? A $20 million contribution or whatever it was. That definitely allowed, despite the very high costs and way higher than they anticipated, that allowed them to clear break even.
Do you feel that there is a endpoint of this unlimited supply of sponsorship from Saudi Arabia, of what it is after in terms of putting its stamp on a lot of these prestige events? And it is something that certainly in boxing and MMA, UFC, mm-hmm. and WWE included in that has benefited from. Is this something that they can, that there is an expected, like this well will dry up at some point?
I mean, at some point, it doesn't seem like we're there yet, right? It seems like UFC is going to expand its relationship with the Saudis from here, not go backwards. I think that's going to probably be a lever for TKO in 2025. I don't know how big it's going to be, but I don't think we're at that point for this particular company yet.
My last thing is, last week marked the 1 year anniversary of TKO and the merger being finalized with WWE and UFC. As you look at year one, there was a lot that happened, not the least of which was, if you had predicted, Vince McMahon would be as far out of favor from this company as possible. And yet WWE did not skip a beat with the loss of Vince McMahon being named in a lawsuit. Like, their business has gone through the roof.
And that surprises you?
I did not expect that there would be a giant impact on company business, but the distance campaign that WWE initiated, I was just amazed at how well they have distanced themselves from Vince McMahon. Like, look at the fact, Brandon, that this Netflix series is coming out next week, and not a peep on WWE programming about this. From, like, what avenue would Netflix be most seeking for people to watch this documentary? And WWE isn't going to promote an ounce of this series coming up. Like, that just tells you, like, the limit of it. Like, Vince McMahon is just the name that will not be mentioned.
Yeah. And it's not a name that they need right now. Why? Because things are good.
Yeah.
Well, so why go backwards if things are going well right now? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, that would be their argument to Netflix. I would say, like, hey, you're in business with us for potentially two decades. Why are we rehashing this?
Why are you bothering to air that?
Yeah. And like, we're not going to promote it. You don't have the muscle to force us.
That's a good question. I think that I understand why Netflix wants to air it on the cusp of them taking over the rights. And
this is something that had been in the works for years.
Yeah. And
the scandals and all that.
That's what I was just about to say.
I'm sure, you know, put a lot of money.
They could have cut it.
Yeah.
They could have cut it, but why would they? And I don't think WWE really has a choice in the matter.
Well, Brandon, we always appreciate your insight into the world of professional wrestling and MMA, especially when it comes to the television business and what lies ahead. But I do encourage people to check out weekly podcast with Walt Piecyk and Rich Greenfield as they go through all of this. Brandon, on top of the combat sports area of things for
thanks,
listeners as well, over at Lightshed Partners. So we thank you very much, Brandon, and will Oasis be on your itinerary in 2026? 25.
I don't know. I'm not a huge Oasis fan, but I kind of grew up on a lot of those songs. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, the concert tour will, I'm sure, be plentiful in 2025.
Yeah, that will very strongly sell out when they announce the U.S. dates in a couple of weeks.
All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Brandon. We always appreciate the time.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. All right, Brandon Ross joining us as we break down the world of AEW, WWE, and UFC. Did you get to see any highlights of the Sphere event? Did you see any visuals? Did you get
to know stills? Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing that moved you in a grand way.
No. It's maybe they learned something from this and how to do shows there, but Dana said they're never doing it again, right?
He has said one and done. Now they also do have an exclusive deal with MGM in Vegas. So there is actually a contractual reason they cannot run. They would have run this at T-Mobile, but T-Mobile gave the date to the Canelo Alvarez fight with Edgar Berlanga this past Saturday. And therefore they got kind of a hall pass for the night to go run this at Sphere as a one time only event. I don't think that you can dismiss the idea of doing this again, at least on my timeline. It seemed to be a lot of positivity from people, especially not so much the prelims where they did not really utilize the Sphere, but come the pay-per-view, like I thought it was an incredible presentation that they pulled off.
And were the prelims on ESPN?
The prelims were on ESPN Plus because
for free, but behind the paywall.
I believe you had to subscribe.
You were in Malaysia already probably by then.
I was in Malaysia because, oh dude, Sportsnet 360 had my, they were driving me nuts on Saturday. They were airing commercials longer than the commercial window. So you'd miss the first minute of the round when they'd come back from commercial break. And this happened continuously, drove me insane on Saturday, but that's my rant against Rogers. But yes, Nick Khan was also in attendance at the Sphere on Saturday. So, what was going through his head? Maybe he was just hanging out with Rey Mysterio and Dominic as well, who were
they there
separately.
Too?
They were seated separately.
Okay. It's hard to imagine a WWE event at the Sphere making sense, at least at the cost that it would currently be. Sure, WWE events tickets are in higher demand than in a long, long time. But they're still not the price of UFC tickets. They could, I don't know, what's the all-time arena gate record? And this is an arena size. It's about $3 million. And maybe they're going to break it again when they go to Vancouver for Survivor Series.
But put that into perspective. Like they did $22 million this past Saturday for UFC, and the arena gate record is three for WWE.
It's just 7 times. Yeah.
Like a WrestleMania to me would be the only event I would put in the Sphere. And I just think like there was sticker shock for UFC consumers for this particular show. And I think that with WWE, it would be that much more. I don't think anything other than WrestleMania could chart. I couldn't even predict, but WrestleMania would be the only thing I would try in this venue.
Yeah, Jake from Windy City says, with extortionate ticket prices like Survivor Series in Vancouver, I feel sooner than later, wrestling won't be affordable to attend for working families.
I mean, that's the reality. But if these were not selling, I think you'd have a much stronger case. But what did Mark Shapiro repeat last week? When there's an immediate sellout, they're upset because they underpriced tickets. They're not having this belief of, making this the most affordable ticket. There are going to be tiers of fans, and the top tier are the ones that can afford these exorbitant prices. And like the counter argument is, pre-pandemic, where a lot of these live events, were they underpriced? Because now there's such a premium on people going for these large events in person for entertainment. And it's very valuable to, your top entertainment and sporting events.
Yeah. I mean, I get the frustration from a fan's perspective, but this is the reality of supply and demand. When you have 10,000 tickets to sell and there's 30,000 people who want them, they're going to go to the people who are willing to pay the most.
All right. You also, just sent me this, on the Janelle Grant front. So it sounds like we are going to get, a press conference tomorrow.
Yeah. I haven't fully digested this, but, there's something happening. We might need to follow up on that.
Okay. Stay tuned, folks. There might be a word coming out of the Janelle Grant camp on Thursday. But Before we get to super chats, and we have quite a few here, if you want to send them in, you're welcome to do so. WWE confirmed their return with Saturday night's main event in December. This is part of their new deal, the SmackDown deal with NBC Universal, that calls for 4 yearly primetime specials on NBC. This will begin December 14th on Long Island at the Nassau Coliseum, 8 p.m. Eastern start time, 2-hour window on NBC. And they're definitely leaning heavily on the nostalgia route for this, complete with Obsession and the promo video they put out, juxtaposing talent from the 80s and then segueing to the modern stars. And I think that's the way to market this primetime special, to make it seem different than just a Raw or a SmackDown. Like, you don't have, when we saw them resurrect this in 2006, like, the novelty of just being on television with competitive matches was a generation removed. And yeah, it was not that successful for those 2 years, where it just became an extra hour or two of more wrestling. You don't need to be producing more wrestling just for the sake of it. But I feel, you know, you're on a hot streak, and I think they will, in the absence of a pay-per-view in December, kind of make this their pay-per-view in December.
It'll be on NBC and Peacock.
That's right. Peacock is tied to this.
It'll be interesting to see what they can deliver on a broadcast network that's NBC as opposed to Fox. This is on, what day of the week is this? Do we know?
Saturday.
We must know, because, yeah, it's, of course, it's Saturday. It's a nice main event. And by that time...
Oh, so we have the head-to-head component as well on Saturday.
By that time, will there be NFL games on Saturday night? That's something we should have prepared.
I don't think they'll have playoff games that early.
No, but we're late enough into the season that there might not be college football, so there might be NFL. And in any case, there'll be football competition of some sort. But yes, interesting to see if we'll get from NBC PR, NBC Sports PR, well, probably not sports, but NBC PR, will they give us a total audience measurement or something like that? I doubt it. But we will at least get an NBC rating, which will be cannibalized somewhat by the Peacock viewership. It's in December, where there's no other PLE scheduled, right? There's just Survivor Series to end the year.
Yeah, that's their empty month. There's no NFL game on that Saturday.
Okay.
All games are Sunday and Monday that week.
So we're probably still in college football. I think there'll still be college football.
There'll still be college football, yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway. And it's, are they going to turn this into something that people really want to watch, or is it just going to be another Saturday night's main event from, what was it, 2008, 2006? That's just, you know, ancillary programming.
Well, if you do remember when they announced the John Cena retirement tour, they did specifically state it will run through December. And I wonder if that is going to be they'll conclude it on NBC in December of next year. I do see them trying to.
That's right. Cause there's no reason to think that they're going to do a premium live event in December next year either. Cause they haven't now for the last couple of years. They've left December open.
Yeah. I think they cut those either before the pandemic or the year before the pandemic.
Frank Riddick really liked the clean year of year comparison that 1 year, and they've left it ever since.
All right, so that's coming back December the 14th. Let's talk a little bit about some ratings notes, because there were some significant ones over the past couple of evenings, beginning with SmackDown's return to the USA Network, as they were back Friday night for the season premiere of the show against college football. Man, was Fox a little catty in its post-WWE Friday night programming that Brandon... pulled up here. I mean, this was quite the shade here by Fox here, noting that their best performance for a Friday night telecast in over 5 months, up 46% week over week against that, you know, second lowest SmackDown ever on Fox, and
which was going against an NFL game.
Yeah, like, very misleading to compare to that prior week, but not technically inaccurate. So anyway, that's how it goes. But this past week, the debut on the USA Network, it ended up yielding a very strong number. Was this at levels you expected for a Friday night? And do you see this being kind of the high point of what SmackDown is going to do, generating an average of 1,723,000 viewers and a 0.55 in the 18 to 49 demographic?
The first episode of a wrestling show on a given network is usually the highest it ever does, right? That was the case.
That was the case in Fox. Yeah, they never came close to the premiere.
That's the case with NXT on USA Network. That's the case with Dynamite on TNT the first time. That's the case with Rampage on TNT. The second one anyway, with Punk's debut. That's the case with Collision on TNT for the first time. And from here, it will in all likelihood go down. Now, what encourages my belief in that is how high this demo rating was. So what you could say is this is a really good demo rating. It was 0.55 in the demo. But the percentage of viewers in the demo as a percentage of the total audience was quite high. It's usually about a third. I don't have the calculator on me ready to go, but this was an especially high demo audience as a proportion of the total audience, which is just what you tend to get when you've got a highly anticipated episode. This was effective hype. People tuned in and they saw the Cody Rhodes and, was a Solo Sikoa cage match. And this was a higher, younger audience than usual. And from here, it will normalize, I think. And you'll see, you know, this was about the range of what Raw is doing on Monday. Monday's a better night, but also compromised by going against Monday Night Football. So I think it's going to do close to what Raw is going to do, but less. But I don't know. I guess this did basically what Raw did now. So it's already against Monday Night Football. So it's going to do under what Raw is going to do throughout Q4 here, and then it'll, you know, then Raw will probably jump back up once football is over by about 10%.
Yeah, one of the notes for Canadian viewers is that during the Fox era, you could watch the show on Sportsnet 360, but also if you had the Fox affiliate, which this is where Brandon and I are united, because I believe our Fox affiliate
WUTV.
WUTV.
Fox 29.
We both get access to. So if you were someone in Southern Ontario watching it on WUTV, you would not be calculated into the Sportsnet 360 numbers. So
really?
Yeah, it is not calculated. And you're probably not a Nielsen home, so you're not being registered in the US. But yeah, so the result was, over 334,000 viewers in Canada, which is anything over 300 is very strong in Canada. Only like your biggest sports are doing much above that. So anyway, that was the biggest SmackDown audience in Canada I can recall, easily the biggest of the year that they did this past Friday. And some of that, like, there's been others where, like, FS1 editions of SmackDown where it's the same deal, it doesn't air on the Fox affiliate, but this was a level above that too. So it wasn't just the fact that
your rating in Canada would be artificially lower when SmackDown was on Fox, because people would be watching it on Fox.
Yeah, because anyone that would be watching on the Fox affiliate, like, that would be tabulated for WUTV viewers in the States. It wouldn't be calculated twice.
Oh, wait, so people watching in Toronto who were watching on Fox up until the last couple of weeks were counted in the Nielsen measurement that we're reporting as U.S. viewership. There's some Toronto viewership infiltrating in there.
That's my understanding. Like, I don't think you have Nielsen homes in Southern Ontario, but that would be the tabulation. It's not.
Yeah, you don't have Nielsen measurement. Yeah.
No. So it might just be estimates of whatever percentage bleeds into Canada.
We'd have to ask Nielsen, are you including people who are watching in Canada but watching on a U.S. affiliate?
That's definitely a question, because it was something I checked years ago about the fact that, like, the Sportsnet 360 number, it only is people that are specifically watching Sportsnet 360.
Okay.
And then Collision returned on to its regular night and time with Collision on Saturday, 268,000 viewers and a 0.08, which was technically up from the prior week, which was a Friday night show, which was a very, very low viewership. And this is not a great number either, moving back to Saturday night, which was a taped show. But I guess the question will be if Collision, what it is going to settle into now that college football is back. And these Saturdays are, again, Saturday night, they were up against 7 college football games. And if you want to throw in the UFC prelims, those were airing on ESPN Plus on Saturday.
Yeah, in terms of direction, like many things with AEW, not great. I believe this ranked, what did I say, number 7 or something like that for the night, according to Programming Insider's list. So not great, but maybe better than replacement programming, which would be reruns of movies.
And then Raw, Monday, 1,509,000 viewers and a 0.49 with the countdown for the final 3 hour shows until we get a temporary reprieve to 2 hours. So up 6% in viewership, up 8 in 18 to 49 from the previous week.
I heard Wei Ting is going to miss the 3 hour spectacles.
Insane. I couldn't quite digest that. I am the furthest from that conclusion. I will not miss that third hour for the life of me. I will be very despondent that first week on Netflix when they decide to go 5 hours or something for that premiere.
But there, notably, you have it. We often want to talk about like week to week ratings and a single rating, but look, Q3 is almost over. It's only a couple episodes of each program left. And look at this bottom row here for people watching in video. It's up 1% in total viewership and up 8% in the demo. So in a challenged environment with the headwind of cable in decline, Raw is still improving in viewership.
Well, we have a ratings question as we go to the super chat. So hopefully Brandon can explain in English for everybody what's going on. From Jumanji Hunter, we thank you for the super chat. Dave Meltzer said that comparing 18 to 49 from 2 to 3 years ago to now is misleading because they're measured differently now. He said that a 0.28 a couple of years ago would be a 0.25 today. Thoughts on that impacts analysis? I don't know what the comment was stated, but you had recently mentioned this, the fact that the principle that the audience is divided by for the 18 to 49 audience, that was recently changed, correct?
Yeah. Well, okay. Every year, so we're talking about, we have the message here on the screen. Let's say there's a 0.28 P18 to 49 rating, a 0.25. What does that actually represent? That is a percentage. So it's 0.28% of what? Of the entire U.S. population between the ages of 18 to 49 who live in TV homes, which is like 97% of people anyway. That number, because the population grows, does increase a little bit, but like we're also, in case of WrestleMania anyway, we're also reporting the number of viewers that represents. It's adjusted slightly because of the rating. I believe these quarterly year-over-year comparisons that we're making here is not the, and this is what's called the national rating. It's based on the national population, which is different from a coverage rating, which is based on the people who have access to the network. So what we have here in this table here, which says Raw is up 8% in the demo. That's based on viewers. That's based on people. That's not based on the national rating, which is a minor difference, I think, anyway. The difference went from most recently. It changes every late August with every new TV season. It went from, I know how to type it better than say it, 131.8 million people, 8.8 million people, something like that, to 140.9 million people. Which is not that big a difference. I will try to calculate quickly what the difference is. It's a difference of 1.7%. So no,
minor.
That's not a big deal.
All right, let's continue on with some other questions here. Well, we kind of addressed this, but let's go here to John Fury. Do you see WWE doing a Raw or SmackDown or PLE in the Sphere in 2025?
It's going to have to be a PLE if anything.
Yeah, and I'm going to say no.
No.
Oh, I mean, they don't even have that many PLEs that are not already set for locations next year. I mean, I guess there's we're still awaiting the SummerSlam announcement for next year, but no, I do not see them happening. No. That happening in 2025.
And this is a 25. And I think this leadership with Mark Shapiro is pretty profit conscious, and that's not going to they're going to be a lot more profitable. I don't know if they can make money in the Sphere. If W can make money in the Sphere, they might be losing money and having to justify it some other way.
Yeah, like you can read between the lines when you've heard Mark Shapiro in interviews and stuff. Like, this was a very costly endeavor that felt like it was, you know, this is Dana White's baby. We're letting him do it, and we're not expecting
now if Turki Al-Sheikh comes up and says, "Hey, we'll give you $50 million," maybe it's a different story though.
Well, and if you did not have the Riyadh season sponsorship, I think this would have been under much greater scrutiny if you take out like $20 million.
Yeah.
I that pretty much covered the production cost right there was that sponsorship deal.
Yeah.
All right. We'll continue on here. Okay. This one, I can feel this. What is going on with Rogers in Canada from Pete in Texas? I don't know how specific, you can get here with what's going on with Rogers in Canada. I imagine you are referring to today's news. So for those outside of Canada, Rogers and Bell are pretty much your two media conglomerates. Okay. They are just at loggerheads with one another. They fight for, you have to pick one or the other. It's pick your poison. Well, these two, they got together and they purchased the controlling stake in Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, which includes the Toronto Maple Leafs, the prized Toronto Maple Leafs, the Toronto Raptors, the Air Canada Center, now Scotiabank Arena. Well, today, Rogers bought out Bell's stake for $3.46 billion. So Bell, which is under tons of layoffs and losses, they have cashed out. So now Rogers owns a 75% stake with the remaining percentages to Larry Tannenbaum and a percentage that he had sold off as well. So I know that this is what everyone wanted us to get to on today's show, but that is what is going on with Rogers in Canada.
So they'll be responsible for the Maple Leafs losing going forward.
Yes, yes. Now you can just direct all of your anger towards Rogers. That's, they'll probably find a way to make this money back.
So that's good news for you. You can consolidate all of that energy towards one place now.
That's it. That's it. And to translate to everyone out there who's like, wait a minute, what is my care here? Rogers, WWE until the end of the year. Bell, AEW. That's how you differentiate them. All right. Some more here. Another one from Jumanji Bunker. How much do non-contract expiration years ratings matter to the company and channel besides setting up for the expiration year for an extension? So you have a 5-year deal, Brandon. What does years 1 through 4 really mean when it comes to their week-to-week performance versus the contract year when they're going to have the greatest scrutiny and impact in the midst of negotiations? I think that's what he's trying to ask.
I guess if I were like a network evaluating AWWE's value, I'm evaluating it year round, right? Like if they're just good, in the final year, and they're not good for whatever reason, they don't put in effort the other 4 years. That's probably not being a good partner, right?
There's also not a magic switch that's like, okay, we're going to be good now. And then you just flip a switch and then suddenly year 5,
it's not happening for AEW right now. I can tell you their ratings were much better in the years prior, even adjusting for cord cutting. You have to be a good partner year round, and you're making money. You're creating value for your network year round in terms of certainly ad revenue. That's dependent on your viewership. There may be some lag there in terms of dictating what ad rates are, but you're certainly justifying and you're creating ad value for them year round. AEW probably not contributing to carriage fees, period. WWE on USA Network probably is. And so you do need the ratings to be strong enough to continue to justify that, at least in WWE's case and maybe one day AEW's case.
We'll take one more from John. Will UFC put their pay-per-views onto Fight Pass like the WWE did when the contract with ESPN ends? I would think there's a very, very high unlikelihood of that occurring. The pay-per-view rights are going to be so coveted by ESPN and probably by others as well that see like
you can
the value
much more in, money licensing it to somebody else than selling it yourself.
Way more. Like, listen to how they talk about the WWE PLE rights, and those are that's without people having to pay that up cost for the UFC pay-per-views. Like, this is to get a UFC pay-per-view, you not only have to spend the $80 on the pay-per-view, you also have to subscribe to ESPN Plus. Unless you have like a ticket to Malaysia, like that's an expensive proposition. It's a way lower price ceiling for WWE rights. And I think pay-per-view content is going to be very coveted by a lot of these streaming services that want your business. And the UFC rights, I do not see those just reverting back to Fight Pass and taking those in-house. So there you have it, everyone. That's your UFC content update. And I think that brings us to an end of this show. Do want to make mention that Brandon Thurston, he has been expanding the Sunday show to include a Q&A portion, which I've been enjoying. It allows Brandon to go outside his comfort zone, such as rebooking AEW. What would Booker Brandon Thurston do? I know he always tells me off air, man, I wish I could talk more about wrestling booking. It's my favorite subject that I never get around to. But if you want to ask any questions to Brandon@WrestleNomics.com, and he will make time for your question each Sunday, but you can't be a freeloader. You got to jump on board at patreon.com/WrestleNomics.
Yes. So this is every Sunday I do WrestleNomics Radio for subscribers at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You can email me. I guess anybody could email a question, but if you want to hear the answer, I will answer it on the program for subscribers. What it allows me to do is to not prepare. Have to prepare as much for the podcast, sort of, but then I end up doing research related to these questions because I get them in advance. So But I think it's been good.
You're always on top of research, graphs, and learning. How iconic has WWE been over the past 10 years? They've peaked when it comes to iconic status.
They have. So we had the press release that announced the iconic brand of Saturday Night's Main Event returning. Did include, I think in the headline itself, the word iconic. Now we have found through our research at WrestleNomics, the think tank, we have learned that the word iconic in press releases actually peaked a few years ago. It actually peaked in 2021 and 2022. And it's been now they have a few more months here to get iconic in a few more press releases. I'm sure there'll be some big announcements. I'm sure we'll have the good fortune to be, you know, to hear more exciting news about WWE for the rest of the year. But something must have happened around 2021 and 2022 that injected that phrase into the parlance, even more. Now they did use it in previous press releases, but not to the extent of the early 2020s. That was really a golden era for iconic being used in WWE press releases.
And Peyton Royce and Billy Kay had nothing to do with
this. We excluded it. Look, we're thorough with our research here. We excluded the double I iconic instance from our research. We anticipated that and did, you know, there was discussion around the table about that. Well, it might just be, you know, the tag team, but no, we excluded that from the research.
All those press releases about Billy Kay and
it did exclude two. It did bring the number down by two.
Oh, wow. Okay. So they did make their names into two press releases. That's interesting.
Yes.
All right. So check that out every Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Tonight, I am back with Wei Ting after tonight's Dynamite. Only 2 hours of wrestling for Wei. I know he really wants a third hour of Dynamite. I'm good with the two. And then again, next week, we are here Thursday next week. So circle your calendar. Subscribe to our channels. Turn on your notifications. You will never miss a show. But Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern, we will react to the Vince McMahon series. And then I will be doing follow-up reviews with Wei at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Unless there's breaking news, we might be back earlier.
Yes. If there is a deal to discuss, we will sound the alarm and you might get a breaking news show. It all depends on the news cycle. Let's throw out our percentages, okay? By next Thursday, when we go live at 1, will there be an AEW deal announced by next Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern time? What would be your percentage? I'm going to
if they're announcing a deal, they're doing it on a Wednesday daytime. So 51%, but it might not be until the next week either.
Okay, I'm going a full 60%.
Wow. Okay,
60.
I'll get the breaking news graphic ready.
All right. Thanks to everyone for joining us. Thank you to Brandon Ross for speaking with us as well. You can check out his work over at Lightshed Partners and maybe on a upcoming TKO earnings call. Maybe we will hear Brandon Ross.
Yes, I'm sure we will.
Possible. All right. Thanks to everyone for joining us, and we will speak with you next week.